Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or seeking to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and Psych Reg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as clinical psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back. So Richard, today we're going to talk about cognitive therapies. We've gone from psychoanalytic therapies to behavioral therapies, and now we're going to talk about cognitive therapies.
That's right, and cognitive therapies are the next step. Next step along the way that we keep adding to our understanding of the human condition.
And nicely, it's a bit of a bridge between the previous two.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Because it's really getting at, we're concerned about behaviors still.
Right.
Behaviors and actions
and feelings. How people behave, why they do the things that they do.
But we're kind of going to a place where we can bridge between the behavioral approach and the psychoanalytic approach, because now we're concerned about what people are thinking about.
That's right. Because what happened with the behavioral approach was seen as an antidote to psychoanalysis.
Right.
It was quicker. It was observable behavior. And now we develop behavioral theories, but then there's a piece missing.
Mm-hmm.
And so as we go along, we say, well, wait a minute. People are also making cognitive decisions about why they do the things that they do.
Yeah.
It's not just reinforcement.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And so this is the next logical step in the progression.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the big players here are Aaron Beck and Albert Ellis,
right?
Who both of whom were really trained.
They were analysts.
As analysts.
That's right. Aaron Beck is a physician who was also a psychoanalyst.
Right.
And Ellis, as a psychologist, was trained as an analyst.
Right.
They were both dissatisfied with the progress that their patients were making.
Mm-hmm.
They said, there's something at work here. We're not making enough progress just using an analytic approach.
It takes too long.
And what they found, what was the thing that they stumbled on?
Well,
the negative thinking.
Right.
That what they discovered was, their patients would come in and they would bring with them these negative thoughts.
Right.
And it was their negative thoughts that were getting in the way.
Right. And this is probably where all of our self-help books came from. This is probably where all of this came from, because it's, you know what, if we could just change these negative thoughts, we could change everything.
Right. Change your negative thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes back to Epictetus, who was a Roman philosopher. And he said, so it's not new.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it has its roots way, 2,000 years ago, who said, it's not what happens, it's your view.
Right.
It's how you view what happens
right.
that matters.
Yeah.
And so it's not a new idea,
mm-hmm.
but it was the next step, the next logical step, in explaining why people do the things that they do. What I like about this perspective is it's in a therapeutic context.
Right.
This wasn't about learning. This wasn't about it was in a therapeutic concept. These
mm-hmm.
were two psychoanalysts who said, we can do better.
Right.
And this is one of the things that we can do.
Right. So with cognitive therapy, what we're really kind of working to focus on are those thoughts.
Right.
And Aaron Beck and Albert Ellis, they did a really... I think that they did a wonderful job of tying these things together to talk about and really evaluate what we think about and what some of those motivations are, because it's more conscious than the subconscious that we get with psychoanalysis,
right.
And it's more internal than the behavioral approach that we look at.
That's right.
And it ties these two pieces together very, very nicely. The other really good thing, the really nice thing about this model is, like behaviorism, you can study this stuff.
That's right.
You know, you can't study, you can't do research really on psychoanalysis, A, because it takes so long. I mean, you're not going to do a research study that's going to take 10 years without having really any benchmarks along the way. But we needed something to be able to say, hey, this is an effective approach to, these kinds of issues. And so Aaron Beck and Ellis, they did this.
Right. And the names of their theories are also indicative, and it's an easy way to remember it. Beck was cognitive behavioral therapy.
Right.
Thinking triggers, leads to behavior.
Right.
And Ellis was rational emotive therapy,
right,
which means rational is the thinking and emotive is the feelings,
mm-hmm,
the emotions.
Right.
Okay, rational emotive therapy. So they acknowledge that there's some combination,
mm-hmm,
of thinking and behavior,
right,
or thinking and emotions, that we have to acknowledge the contribution of both.
Right.
Okay. So in each case, it was, if we can change your thinking, we can change your behavior.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so we get therapeutic techniques that focus on that. And
right,
so one of the things that we think about that, that sort of came from these guys is the idea of cognitive distortions.
Right.
Right. So when we're working with a person who, you know, whether they have depression or anxiety or whatever the case may, mm-hmm, be, what we're looking for are those sort of underlying drives, underlying thoughts, emotions that lead to particular belief systems or,
right,
patterns of behavior. So, you know, a person who's depressed, for example, may have some internal monologue that says, you know, oh, I'm never going to get any better.
Right.
I'm always wrong. I can never do anything right. You know, those kinds of negative, that negative self-talk, that those cognitive distortions, and we call them cognitive distortions because they are, by their very nature, so absolute that they can't be true. I'm always wrong. Well, you're not always wrong,
mm-hmm,
because we can come up with lots of examples where you weren't wrong.
Right.
We can, you know, I never do anything right. We can demonstrate through actions, mm-hmm, through behaviors, times when you do things right.
Right.
So they're cognitive distortions because they take a particular circumstance and they generalize it and globalize it. They make it to where that's the rule.
That's right.
The rule is, I never do anything right.
That's right.
And that contributes to the ongoing depression.
Distorted thinking.
Right.
Irrational thinking.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the things we should say, and this is true for behavioral approaches and CBT and RET, is that these are not quick and easy therapies to use.
Right.
You don't just, and we have many, particularly teenagers will come, mm-hmm, in and say, oh yeah, he told me just to change my thinking. It's not
right
that simple.
Mm-mm.
Okay. So these approaches, whether they're behavioral or cognitive behavioral, take time,
mm-hmm,
and effort. You can't just change somebody's thinking by talking them into it.
Right.
Okay. They also have to change their outcomes.
Right.
So they're not going to believe you if you don't change their outcomes. And these things don't happen,
mm-hmm,
with a single session.
Right.
It's going to take time. And so if you're going to use these approaches, know that it's going to take some work,
right,
to change your thinking,
mm-hmm,
and then to change your behavior,
right,
or to change how you feel.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that we didn't mention in the last podcast with behaviorism is that, you know, there are circumstances that have to be met for the behavioral approach to work. It has to be that those consequences, those reactions have to be consistent. They have to be immediate. They have,
mm-hmm,
to be predictable. Those three conditions have to, mm-hmm, be met if the behavioral approach is going to work.
Right.
With the cognitive behavioral therapy, it's similar because,
right,
it has to be. There's a wonderful video that I use of a therapeutic process used, is from England. It was,
mm-hmm,
recorded in England, of a woman with severe obsessive compulsive disorder. And the therapist comes to the home and is working with her on different things. It's a great approach. It's sort of a desensitization approach.
Mm-hmm.
And so what the therapist is doing is demonstrating to her that a lot of these fears are irrational.
Right.
And so one of the fears is she can't touch, she's fearful of germs. So she washes her hands a lot. She has a one-year-old, so she's really anxious about picking up the one-year-old unless she washes her hands a certain,
mm-hmm,
number of times and is sufficiently satisfied that her hands are clean. So she can't touch her mail, for example.
Right.
And so one of the things that the therapist had her do is that to not only get the mail, but to take the mail and wipe the mail all over, the actual mail, all over her couch,
mm-hmm,
and then sit on the couch.
Right.
And, you know, she talks about the discomfort that she's feeling, but she's working to demonstrate, mm-hmm, that it's irrational.
Right.
And then the child comes in And the therapist has her pick up the child, and she's very anxious about this and holds the child, and she hasn't washed her hands or anything, so she's extremely anxious about it. That approach was so powerful for mm-hmm. this woman, and you know, we see her sometime later.
So did she make progress?
She did. She made tremendous progress. And so we see sometime later that she's walking and she's not having to dodge things in the right. sidewalk anymore, and mm-hmm. she's able to hold her son, and her son's able to play. And so cognitive behavioral therapy in that circumstance worked very, very well.
Right.
But my challenge always is, she wipes everything down with the mail, picks up mm-hmm. her son without washing her hands. What if her son would have caught a cold?
She would have fired her therapist.
That would have reinforced that fear so strongly right. that she probably would not have responded anymore.
Right.
She
wouldn't
have taken
another chance.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because if her son had gotten the flu, which could have happened anyways.
Just serendipitously.
If he would have gotten the flu or a cold or just the sniffles or mm-hmm. anything, she would have immediately tied that to the irrational thought.
That's
because
right.
that is the irrational thought, that mm-hmm. the germs will get you sick.
Right.
And it would have been done. I mean, she would not have... I can't foresee...
No.
Without years of treatment, I could mm-hmm. not foresee her coming back from that.
Right.
And that's the risk sometimes with some of these approaches, is if it's not consistent and immediate and
right.
predictable,
mm-hmm.
it can be not only ineffective, but it can be... It can worsen certain circumstances.
Right. And the scenario that you just said, where she rubbed the mail on mm-hmm. the sofa, one of the things to remember about cognitive behavioral therapy is that negative thinking doesn't just go away.
Right.
You have to act against it. You
right.
have to put the person in a situation,
mm-hmm.
as this therapist
right.
did, where she actually had to rub the mail on the sofa, sit on the sofa, pick up the child. Because until you act against the negative behavior,
right.
it's not going to change.
Right.
That's why when people come in and they say, well, you know, he told me to change this and change. No, it's not something you talk through.
Right.
You have to take some action.
Right.
And it has to be tangible.
Right.
And that's when you get rid of the negative thinking. So
right.
that's a very good demonstration
yeah.
of that concept.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't know that.
Right.
That this is where the work comes in.
Right.
You have to be willing to do that kind of work. You don't
right.
just sit and talk about it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's, I think, a big challenge that a lot of people have, because they'll see their physician or they'll see someone and they'll say, oh, you need to go see this person and have cognitive
right.
behavioral therapy, and that'll help you change those thoughts. And then we give them homework, or we say, okay, this is what you need to do.
I'm not
going to do that.
Well, they may need cognitive behavioral therapy, but if they're not willing to do it,
right.
it's not going to be an effective therapy.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there has to be... There's this idea in counseling about the patient's readiness for
right.
therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And if the patient's not ready for therapy,
mm-hmm.
no matter what approach you use,
right.
it's not going to be
effective. Yeah, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what
I've
makes...
way too many times.
That's what makes... all of this more challenging with teenagers
right.
is they are resistant by nature.
Mm-hmm.
And until you establish a therapeutic relationship, it's very difficult to do these therapies.
Yeah.
You don't impose these therapies. You work
mm-hmm.
with patients
mm-hmm.
or clients. You don't impose these on people.
Which is a wonderful transition to the type of therapy we're going to talk about tomorrow in the next podcast. And that's the humanistic
right.
therapeutic
right.
approach,
mm-hmm.
Which is very much so centered on the patient, him
right.
or herself.
More patient-centered than
right.
therapist-centered.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So far, a lot of the things that we've been talking about are the things that the therapist does, or the, you know, the
or
supervisor
asks, right. mm-hmm.
does to elicit some type of change. And the humanistic therapies are much more centered on the patient
mm-hmm.
as sort of the expert of their own self.
Right. right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we're going to talk about that tomorrow.
Good.
Awesome. So, that's it.
Okay.
Cognitive behavioral therapy is probably the most common. Oh, you know what we forgot to talk about? Oh, I'm so glad I didn't hit stop. There is a new form of cognitive behavioral
mm-hmm.
therapy, a newer form of cognitive behavioral therapy called dialectical behavioral therapy.
Right.
And what that does is that sort of takes cognitive behavioral therapy and reinforces or boosts it with this idea of social relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes these same ideas and applies it to the nature and strength and quality of the patient's relationships with other people.
Mm-hmm.
It's useful, or has been found to be useful, in a variety of contexts, especially with a very challenging set of circumstances with borderline personality disorder, which is really a disorder that's all about troubled relationships.
That's right.
And so not only troubled relationships with other people, but troubled relationships with oneself.
Within oneself.
Right. And so DBT, or dialectical behavioral therapy, has kind of shown to be pretty effective with some folks with those issues.
Right. And which is also a bridge to tomorrow, because what we're going to be talking about tomorrow is the person in the world.
Right.
The person in a context, including your social relationships.
Right.
And so DBT begins to make a segue toward what we're going to be discussing tomorrow.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
So, all right.
Very good. Glad you mentioned
that.
Yeah,
no, that's a big one. Mm-hmm. So, all right, that's it for today. So, until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.